This is Puget Sound Now, a look inside the issues happening in our communities around the Sound.
A good neighbor village, part of Pierce County's solution to the homeless crisis.
Most of all, they're living a life with dignity because they have their own place.
Plus, a community effort to save an iconic Tacoma church.
This is a Pacific Northwest treasure. It is our Notre Dame.
Good morning again. Bill Swartz with a jam-packed Puget Sound Now on this final Sunday in September. Coming up next Sunday, a loud walk in Seattle to end a silent disease. New key findings from the American Cancer Society report tell us 4 screenable cancers are on the rise for adults in the United States. Breast and prostate cancer for all ages, and then colorectal cancer is now the number one cause of death for men under age 50 and the number 2 for women. And tragically, a CCR, as it's called, is expected to be the top cancer killer for males and females in this country by year 2030. It's one thing to talk about these statistics or trends, but what have we done many times in Puget Sound Now? We put a face, a voice to the story about colorectal cancer, and we offer important reminders about screenings and the growing support network for patients and families. And stopping by our show this morning is Nayab Hussain, a stage 4 colon cancer survivor. And Nayab, first of all, thank you so much for your willingness to share your journey and really this important message with our listeners.
Of course, yeah. Thank you for having me.
Your story is unique for many reasons. Late 20s, when you were diagnosed with CCR, and you're also a provider in the gastroenterology field. So you had to know something about the disease, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I previously worked with an adult population, and it's interesting to be on the other side of things because I used to be the one who diagnosed patients after a colonoscopy with colon cancer, colorectal cancer.
And like many of us, you probably went to the internet, and now you're looking at symptoms and saying, oh, I have this, I have that, right?
Looking back, I was like, oh, I should have thought of this. But, you know, when you're going through something, you don't always think it's happening to you.
This is always considered the silent disease. But if you'd be so kind, talk about it. What were your concerning symptoms and when did you start having them?
For sure. I started having symptoms in 2021. And honestly, I feel like my symptoms were so vague. My presenting symptom was just fatigue. And that's how I ended up seeing my primary care doctor. You know, I'm very active. And so I just started noticing that I just didn't have the energy anymore. I would spend most of my time wanting to sleep, not wanting to go out as much. And so finally, I was like, this isn't normal. Let's get this checked out. And so I went to my primary care provider and, you know, young woman coming in saying, you know, she's tired, fatigued. Of course, we think the most common things like, is it your thyroid? Is it vitamin D deficiency? So we kind of went down that route. And then they found out I had mild anemia. It wasn't anything, you know, like I said, it was mild. Like no one looked at it and said, oh, this girl needs a colonoscopy. This girl needs an endoscopy. It was just like, hey, let's treat this with some oral iron supplementation. And that's what I did for a few months. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for a while, I thought I felt better too. I thought I was getting my energy levels back. You know, I was hiking in the Pacific Northwest. I had just moved here. And so I was excited to explore. And then come that fall, I started having like a very vague abdominal pain. Mm-hmm. It was never severe. It never like prevented me from doing anything. I would still go to work. I would still spend time with friends, but it was just kind of there and lingering. And then finally, over the holidays for Christmas, I went home to Kentucky. I was visiting my family, and I'm fortunate that my older brother is his father-in-law, the woman he's married to, her dad is a gastroenterology doctor also. Oh my. And so, you know, both of us working in GI, you know, just getting together over the holidays, I was just talking to him about my vague abdominal pain. And he was like, I really think you need a colonoscopy. And I was like, no, I don't.
Like 28? Oh, wait a minute. Yeah.
Exactly. I was like, 28, like, you're just joking with me. Like, we always joke about this kind of stuff. And he's like, no, I really think you need one. And finally, my parents were like, hey, you're here for the holidays. Like, you might as well get one. Like, you know, we can drive you after the procedure, since with the anesthesia, you can't drive. And they're like, you know, it'll be easier to do it here than in Seattle. And so finally I agreed to it and I was like, okay, whatever. And yeah, it was very life-changing afterwards. So I was diagnosed the day after Christmas on December 20th.
Wow. Our guest this morning on Puget Sound Now is Nayab Hussain, a stage 4 colon cancer survivor, and we hope to say a thriver as well. So after the diagnosis, then what's the treatment plan?
Everything just kind of came to a halt, but at the same time, everything started moving really fast. I felt like time was the most important thing. So we had to do surgery first to remove the tumor. And after that, it was kind of this... I had to do like multiple CT scans, PET scans, things like that to see if it had spread anywhere. And then we just had to wait for the pathology to come back from the cancer. If you were positive for lymph nodes, that means there's a chance it spread throughout your body. And then chemo was the next step.
Did you have any history in your family of colorectal cancer?
No, there's absolutely no family history.
So continue on with your story then as far as the treatment. You're into the chemo now, not radiation, but what other plans did you have? And tell us about the network of docs and supporters for you.
I'm getting surgery in Kentucky, but when it came down to needing chemotherapy, I wanted to go back to Seattle. Like, you know, I was young, I was 28, I had just moved there. I started making a life for myself there. I had made friends and, you know, I really loved my job. And so I didn't want to give any of that up. And so in the end, after much debating with my mother and father, they agreed to let me go back to Seattle to just continue living a normal life because that's what I needed. I needed normalcy despite this disease. My cancer treatment was done at Fred Hutch. It was chemotherapy and, just the few friends I had made here, they were very supportive of me. They would go with me to chemotherapy appointments. And my best friend back in Kentucky, she would work 7 days on, 7 days off. She would fly from Kentucky, to go to chemo appointments with me if it landed on a week off for her.
Well, that has to be empowering to know that you have those people that are in your life in a heartbeat. They're here for you. And you need that in this kind of a journey. You can't be alone.
No, yeah, I'm so thankful that I did have time to meet friends and make a community here, even if it was, you know, within a year, who were so supportive of me and able to be with me during the most challenging time of my life.
So you're now an advocate on behalf of the Colorectal Cancer Alliance, and we'll talk about two important events coming up. But tell me, you've written a speech, and thank you for sharing that with me. Cancer, you said, has made a permanent home in my life journey. But I decided then and there, cancer does not and will not ever define me. Is that you by nature? Are you a battler? Or you've just said, I'm taking cancer on and I'm going to knock you out?
You know, I think... the minute I was told I had cancer and I went through the stages of grief very quickly, especially denial, what I wanted most in my life is just to live a normal life, whatever normal is. But for me, it was just, you know, going to work, spending time with my friends and family, traveling, and I didn't want to give any of that up. That's the mindset I had to take on. I feel like over half the battle with cancer is the mindset, just going into it, being like, I can do this. I will get through this. It will definitely be hard and challenging, but I can do this. And so I just decided then and there, like, you have to get through this and you will.
Other adult women young adult women have been guests on our program and talked about their journey, and they're in their 50s. And, you know, it used to be colonoscopies were recommended after 55. But now, given the statistics I just outlined by the American Cancer Association, we're seeing younger folks, as you said, you're in the late 20s. 40s, 30s. And so it's been lowered now, that recommended age to go get your colonoscopy, the first one, right?
I believe it's been lowered to 45. Mm-hmm. But if you have family history of colon cancer in a first degree relative, like mom, dad, brother, sister, they say 10 years before the initial diagnosis. So if the relative was diagnosed at, let's say, age 30, first screening colonoscopy for the family member would be age 20.
So how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. I'm very thankful that I am done with treatment. I'm done with chemotherapy. I'm done with immunotherapy. And I'm kind of in the surveillance phase now where every few months I'm getting CT scans and some blood work and just kind of making sure it does not come back.
That's wonderful news. And why did you feel the need to become an advocate for the Colorectal Cancer Alliance?
I would never want anyone to go through what I did, especially, you know, just a young someone that it's like, like you said, the incidence is rising. It's not just like a middle-aged disease anymore for people in their 50s. There are young men and women getting diagnosed in their 20s and 30s. And I just felt like I could raise awareness and make a difference and empower people to listen to their bodies, empower people to reach out to their providers. And it's not like, you know, colon cancer, talking about your bowels, your bowel health, is not something very glamorous. I feel like a lot of people don't want to talk about that. Mm-hmm. There is some shame, there's some embarrassment around it. And so I just want to let people know that, you know, it's important and you should speak up and you should be an advocate for yourself and for others.
Well, even the commercials are getting real out there. Women go poop.
Yeah.
It's great to have that conversation and be real and honest. It could save your life. So are you feeling strong enough to go back and do your hiking again?
Oh, absolutely. I'm actually going on a hike this weekend on Saturday.
Great. And then, Nayab, you are participating in the annual Walk Loud to End Colorectal Cancer. It's an event October 5 at Seattle's Gasworks Park. Have you been part of that event as you've been on your journey and connect with these other survivors?
No, this will be my first year participating. So I'm very excited. I might be doing a speech there also. You know, just to raise more awareness.
Well, thank you for doing that. And the website to register for that one is ccalliance.org/Seattle Walk. That's the Colorectal Cancer Alliance and a growing organization here in Seattle for, I guess, positives and negatives. One, there's more people being diagnosed, but two, there's a bigger support network.
Absolutely. Yeah. Last year, though I did not participate, the turnout was really big. Apparently, there was about 1,000 people there, if not a little more. And the walk is completely free. So anyone can register, adults, children.
It raises money, it raises awareness, and I think it raises spirits too, when there's people banding together for a common cause. You can't help but feel stronger about yourself and about your community.
For sure. And you don't feel alone. Like throughout this community, I've met other survivors, young, around my age, some older than me, but it's nice to know that I'm not alone.
Nayab Hussain, self-proclaimed Seattle Mariners fan, colon cancer survivor. Thank you so much for your story, your willingness to share it on Puget Sound Now. I think it'll make a difference.
Thank you so much for having me.
To participate in that loud walk at Seattle's Gasworks Park, the website is impact.ccalliance.org. How do we best tackle the homeless crisis in Western Washington, and what ways can we create affordable housing with all of the support services needed to come out of chronic homelessness? Let's discuss. There's something called Community First Village, which opened in Austin, Texas back in 2015. It's had tremendous success results, and now the concept is coming to Pierce County and possibly to a Catholic church in Tacoma. Let's get a great conversation now with some longtime friends here on Puget Sound Now. Jack and Angela Connolly, it's great to catch up with you both. Thank you.
Good to see you, Bill.
And Duke Paulson is the executive director with Tacoma Rescue Mission. Thank you for your time today as well, sir.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Duke, let's start with you. You've been in the business of helping the homeless in the City of Destiny for quite a while. What's going on in Tacoma with regards to tent camps, people living outdoors in unsafe conditions? Give us a lay of the land.
Yeah, there's an increase in homelessness that's been consistent year over year for the last 10 years in Pierce County, and it's consistent with what's gone on across the state of Washington. And people are seeing it. It's far more visually available to see the tents out in the community, encampments, problems politically with people complaining and politicians trying to figure out how to intervene and yet still, you know, be
mindful of people's rights as individuals. So we're definitely in the heart of a lot of those conflicts of what's going on in the community. And the Tacoma Rescue Mission as a entity is the largest shelter provider in our county. So we have at any given night over 500 people that are staying under in our shelter system, whether it's our families with children, our men's shelter, our women's shelter, our addiction recovery programs, et cetera. So we're highly involved with this process.
And so you have support services close to where those shelters are. Is that correct?
We do. All of our shelters are located in Tacoma. So they're in the urban core of Pierce County. And so we're close to the hospital systems and a lot of the other care providers in the community that are located really within a few miles of us.
At the top of this segment, I mentioned something called Community First Village, which started in Austin, Texas. The three of you have gone down there to take a look at this. It is residents living in micro homes in a planned unit development, planned community development. Jack, Angela, what did you see down there?
We saw, Bill, a lot of people that are living, were on the streets. They were, I think, on the average on the streets for about 9 years. And you've never seen so many happy people. I mean, they have their own home. It's a 400 square foot home. They live there with, I think there's 350 people in the village. They live in community. They've got people there working with them and helping them. And they've got services if they need and want them. But most of all, they're living a life with dignity because they have their own place and they're not out on the street or in a tent.
In addressing this issue so long, Angela, I've seen that if you give people hope and a place to call their own to take pride, that's a huge starting point.
Yes. It's interesting the empowerment that they feel given that they are paying their rent. They pay rent, mm-hmm. all of them, and they can work in the community to raise the money to pay the rent. They realize that this is their place. They also, you know, there's a wonderful agreement that everyone who lives there signs, which is that they are going to be a good neighbor. And that means so much. It means that the houses are clean, that people are caring for each other. And there's really, it's a safe, peaceful place. And you can sense the warmth of what feels like a family. When we were in Austin, it was an incredible, you know, Jack said happiness. It is. There's a happiness, a peacefulness in the folks who live there. And it was a joy to see that. There's one quick example that I thought was really impactful to me. It was a man who had started in the village and didn't come out of his house for about a year, except very late at night, never spoke to anyone. After the neighbors were being good friends to him and bringing him things, he started to trust again after all the trauma he had been through. He ended up becoming the mayor of the village.
Oh, no.
And you saw this wanting to take care of each other.
Yep.
Now, we mentioned all of this Austin, Texas project because Pierce County is soon to break ground on a similar planned unit development out in Spanaway, near the Spanaway Loop. Jack and Angela, how did you get involved with this project?
Well, it was a project that Bruce Stanmeyer, the county executive, and Steve Obam had started up, and then they got Duke Paulson involved, who runs the rescue mission. And one thing led to another. They asked us to get involved, and it was, we went down to Austin. We loved the project. And it's a beautiful project, Bill, not only for the homeless people that live there, but it's also for the people that are working with them and helping them. And we decided that it was something that we would like to get involved in. And there's been an incredible outpouring of people in Pierce County that want to become part of this.
I found over my history of doing radio conversations and projects, and when people pull together, public-private partnerships work so beautifully. So Pierce County, Duke, has $22 million to buy the land out of pandemic relief. And then Tacoma Rescue Mission, your group, is going to run this, correct?
Correct.
And how big is the scope? How many people are going to live out there in the Spanaway property?
The county's initial investment is helping us. We've already purchased the land, so the Rescue Mission owns the land. And it's helping us with all the pre-development, roads, infrastructure, like sewer, water, electricity, and really building out to where houses are going to be built. So the foundations will be there. Our goal is to have 285 units of housing, plus the support services. So we'll have 285 of these cottages. So I don't want to think micro homes where people are thinking.
It's not a like tiny home size. Village.
No, it's not okay. The 80 to 90 foot tiny home village. These are actually what you think of as when people do DADU, the extra residences in their house where you have a living room, a bedroom, a kitchenette, everyone has a toilet, you have a front porch, you have an HVAC system, you know, heating and cooling. That's what we're going to put into these units that are really designed to be mini permanent homes for people. And so we'll have 285 of those plus common, like a 10,000 foot living room space for people to come for community gatherings, for recreation space, office spaces. We already have partnerships with our local hospital system with and with healthcare providers and with Pierce Transit to provide bus access and transportation in and out of the village. So there really is meant to be a, if you will, it's an intentional, like Seabrook kind of a thing where people are, this is an intentional community. And it's a gated community. It's a safe place for people to come and live and be protected and taken care of and feel that safety and dignity again of belonging. So that's our long-term goal. And you're right. One of the most enticing things for the community is the public-private partnership. So the fact that the public entity in the county has invested in this to do all the dirty work, the less glamorous, you know, buy the property, get everything together. And then the community can come along and say, we're going to help build this home. So we already have private individuals who've said, we're going to help build, we're donating to build this home, and we're donating to build a laundry facility. And we have a foundation that said, we're going to help build a hydroponic facility so that people can come and grow stuff year round and produce food for the village and hopefully to give out to other people in the community as well. So it's a real draw to have that partnership of the community coming together saying, here's how we can all do this.
That's fabulous. Duke Paulson is the executive director with Tacoma Rescue Mission, one of our guests on Puget Sound Now, along with Angela and Jack Connolly. They're also part of a citizens group trying to buy Our Lady of the Holy Rosary Church from Pope St. John Paul Parish and the Seattle Archdiocese. It's a complicated issue, but I think it fits into the bigger conversation of how do you restore a community treasure and make it a place for the community in a positive manner. Jack, we might have seven shows to tackle this issue. You and Angela have a long family history in this building. People can see driving along Interstate 5, a 210-foot-tall steeple, a magnificent structure that's 104 years old. What's happened to Holy Rosary? Is it deemed for demolition at this state?
Well, it had been. The Archdiocese had deemed it for demolition, and it went up to the Vatican. The Vatican sent it back, and it's right now, there's a determination being made by the Archdiocese as to what should be done with it. We're hoping that they will not take the path to destroy it and instead will allow it to be used for the community and you know, for good purposes, much like the village that we're talking about. It's an icon. The people of Tacoma love that church. And we've met with people that have told us, architects and contractors that say it does not need to be destroyed. So we're hoping to save it and to use it for the community.
Angela, just boil it down. What's your vision for Holy Rosary if it can be saved and restored?
Well, I think it is such an icon of history and culture in our area for the way beyond Tacoma. This is a Pacific Northwest treasure. It is our Notre Dame. And it's interesting, I think, to really embrace and treasure it. So I think it could absolutely be a place for prayer, and it can be a gathering place, but also that could have a museum part of the campus where we actually, we have a collection of what, you know, it was these women who came and started the first schools. These nuns were the first ones to start schools and hospitals in our area. Wow. In our capital is Mother Joseph. But why not embrace the whole campus as a place of restoration and remembering and celebrating? And so there could be music concerts there, and there could be art collections and speakers, and just really accessible for the entire community, but beyond our community. I think this could be a place that would draw people from far and wide.
Well, Tacoma already has a glass art museum, and you have a car museum, so why not a Holy Rosary Catholic Church museum? I mean, or but a working museum. Am I on the right track here?
That's exactly right. We're hoping it can be put to very good use, and it really should be, both for Catholics and non-Catholics alike. Yeah.
So you've been in the legal profession, my friend, a long time, successful. This is Tacoma versus Rome, with a little bit thrown in between with the Seattle Archdiocese. Is this like David and Goliath?
Well, it is a little bit, but we're hoping it will be Tacoma with Rome and with the Archdiocese. Okay. And that everyone will join together, and we feel like we're all on the same team.
And that there's such a win-win solution.
I hear you. So give me a little timetable. What's your best hope that we get a final answer from the Seattle Archdiocese? Okay, we can reach a deal here. The property is yours. Go for it.
We've done everything we can at this point, Bill, and so it's really in their hands right now. We've made an offer that would preserve the church, restore the church, and at this point, it's a matter of waiting and getting the response from them. And we're hoping that the response is positive for, you know, both the church and for the people of Tacoma.
And Duke, finally, the Pierce County Community Village, groundbreaking when, and how about first occupancy?
We're hoping to have our groundbreaking somewhere around the end of October. We will, we should be hearing about our first permits being issued this week. Or early next week is our goal. So as soon as we find that out, we'll plan on our groundbreaking, because we can start, you know, legally moving forward on that. Our goal is to have people living there by early 2026. So give us about a year to do all the infrastructure work, and then we'll start putting homes together and going out to the 1,000+ people in the community who are chronically homeless, and bringing them in for giving them an opportunity to come pay rent and live in a community and work, but have a home that they can call their own. And if we do this well, in a few years, we'll have a quarter or more of the chronically homeless population safely in one location where they're living well and being served.
Duke, give an idea how folks in the South Sound, Tacoma, Pierce County, or anywhere in our listening audience can be part of these whole projects.
Multiple ways people can be involved. This whole village concept is designed around not only providing a safe place for our neighbors to have a permanent place to live, but for the community to come in and be involved as well. So we have a website, www.gnvlife.org. So Good Neighbor Village, this is the initials, gnvlife.org is the website. And on that, people can sign up to stay informed of what's going on, learn how to volunteer. We're going to have every kind of opportunity, from people donating to sponsor a house being built, to sponsor a house being decorated, customized for the person that's going to be moving in there, for recreation space and creative space, for building the farm. And then for people to come and volunteer and help us build the farm, build these houses, maybe make dinner once a month for people. There's so many different ways to be engaged. We're actually going to have an art studio in the property as well. So for people to come in and help people paint, or a lot of this is using your hands and being creative, and from farming to art, or allowing people to create and build things, and helps us reestablish that dignity for people. There's going to be so many different ways for the community to come around to be involved in what we're doing, that come to the website, check it out.
talk to some friends and see what would be comfortable for you to come engage with. I'd say right now, because we're in the construction phase, the biggest thing is we're raising money for actually building the homes and the community. So many different ways to be involved. Just come and find out what fits for you, for anyone that's listening.
Yeah. That is a great first step. See, we can solve the world's issues in a 20-minute conversation just like that. How hard was that? Duke Paulson is the executive director with the Tacoma Rescue Mission, and my friends Jack and Angela Connolly helping not only to restore, keep their church there, Holy Rosary, but do some great work in the community of Pierce County, my home. Thank to all of you and for this great conversation on Puget Sound Now.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Many thanks to all of my guests for another terrific Puget Sound Now. You'll find the podcast on our website, nwnewsradio.com. I'm Bill Swartz. We're back again next Sunday morning.
Thank you for listening to Puget Sound Now. Tune in every Sunday morning to learn about the issues happening in our communities around the Sound. Puget Sound Now is a public service of Lotus Seattle Corp.